Well, good morning. Welcome. This is a program we call the Roundtable. It's back. It's very nice to have you with us. After a bit of fundraising, we are back, and we are here all through the days of our fundraiser in June. We kept on saying, we're going to get back to regular programming. We're going to get back to regular programming. We're going to get back to regular programming. And then on Friday, we were able to do that. And today is the first day we're back on the air with the Roundtable, and we couldn't be more thrilled to be with you. First of all, I want to thank everybody for making it such a special drive and ending it in fine fashion. And of course, to everybody who worked so hard on it throughout the days, it was quite an event, and we are very happy that it is over, and we're very happy that you were with us to make sure that it was able to be completed. So thank you very, very much. A $1.25 million fund drive completed, and we shouldn't be bothering you for another, I don't know, 12 weeks or so. So
1-800.
No, right. Yeah. So enjoy it. Have fun.
We can hear it in our sleep. 1-800-323-9262.
That's all. I murmur that in my sleep. But so it's really nice. Libby asked me a very sweet question a moment ago. She said, "Did you miss us?" And oh my God, did I miss you all? I so missed you. And I miss talking about these stories. I brought it up a couple of times when we were on the air of like, well, if we were on the air today, we would be talking about this or we'd be talking about that. And so I've tried over I went through the last 2 weeks of news, and I picked out a couple of stories that we missed that I wanted to get to, that I wanted us to opine on. Like, I just didn't want the Ten Commandments story to go by the wayside. I didn't want the bump stock story to go by the wayside.
The Ten Commandments story can never go by the wayside.
No, I know. You're right. You're absolutely right on that. And so that brings us to this wonderful panel this morning. And we have a great group. And I am so excited that they're all here in the same room. I thank them as well. Political consultant and lobbyist Libby Post. Good morning, Libby. How are you?
I'm good. Tomorrow's primary day. I'll be very happy when it's over.
Now, okay, so let's just say that the best thing happens and your candidates in the primary win.
Uh-huh.
So then is that immediately, I mean, I know this is a Democratic city, but does that immediately mean that you go like right into the general, or do you have a little bit of a reprieve?
No, I have to have a little bit of reprieve because on July 17th, I'm having my hip replaced.
I have to have a little reprieve. Not exactly the reprieve
right,
I was thinking
right,
about,
right,
but okay.
Right.
I was thinking more palm trees.
Yeah, no. We'll see. I mean, in Albany County, if you win the primary as a Democrat, it's very difficult to lose in the general election against a Republican because the voter odds are so overwhelming. The voter registration for Democrats is so overwhelming in Albany County. So, you know, there is a Republican running for district attorney. Don't ask me what his name is. And we'll see who wins tomorrow. I do not think there's a Republican running for the assembly seat in the 109th, where there are six Democrats vying in the primary for tomorrow. Kent Sopras and Chloe Pierce, who are running in the 107th Democratic primary, whoever wins that will have a real campaign because the 107th got gerrymandered with redistricting, and it is Bethlehem, the town of Bethlehem, northern Columbia, rural Rensselaer, and then southern Washington. It's like it goes around, you know, Troy and the East Greenbushes and the Greenbushes and all that. And that's Scott Bendett, who was handed the seat in 2022 because redistricting happened. People realized it, but nobody was ready for Pat Fahey to no longer represent the town of Bethlehem. But now there's my candidate, who I will go unnamed because I can't push them on here. But whoever wins that will go up against Bendett. And it's not going to be an easy race, but it is winnable with the right candidate on the Democratic side. And then there are three family court seats up in Albany. Five people running, three women and two men.
Ralph Ambrosio was the Republican candidate.
Oh, thank you. For district attorney?
For DA.
Yeah, for DA.
In Albany County.
Right. And this county likes electing women judges, especially on family court when there's a choice. So we'll see what happens tomorrow night. It should be interesting. With any luck, I'll be happy. However, I just want to – can I do this now, Joe? I just want to –
Yeah, I just got – we did get a note that Alicia Purdy is running.
Oh, right. I forgot. Alicia Purdy's running in the 109th. She's the woman who ran against the mayor in 20 – what are we in? 24 – in 23 – right? No, 21. In 21. She ran against the mayor in 21. She's not going to get anywhere either. However, there has been text messages going out to people, mostly I think in Albany County, saying if you've registered to vote at your home address, this is where you should go to vote. So someone in Menands got it. And it said, go to the Greenfield Community Center at 250 Broadway, Menands. Well, there is no Greenfield Community Center in Menands. That's where I live. We vote at the firehouse. And they said, and this is coming from a group called Vote FTW. Then, and people called them and talked to the guy who was the point person that we understand. And he said, oh, we're sorry. We'll send out a correction. So they sent out a correction. And that was, you may have received a text yesterday for the upcoming primary with an incorrect address for your polling place. This is for somebody who lives in New Scotland. The location is the Rush Henrietta Transportation Building. The address is 1133 Lehigh Station Road, Henrietta, New York, 14467. Where is that, Mike?
It's about 3.5 hours west of us near Rochester.
That's right. And so this group, while it's ostensibly pro-democracy, and the point person on this that was contacted, Evan Hutchison, is running against Dan Goldman in the Democratic primary for New York 10 down in the city. And they say they're pro-democracy. As far as I'm concerned, this is voter suppression. It's false voting information.
Do you think it's intentional or incompetence that this went out?
This has happened twice before. They did this in Wisconsin, and they did this in North Carolina.
But on behalf of who?
On behalf of no one except their organization, which is Vote FTW.
Okay.
That's it. So they just sent these things out. And their disclaimer is, well, you know, we're not election officials, so you might want to go to the state board, and here's the link to make sure we're right about where you should go to vote. I mean, it's astounding.
Does the link work?
Oh, yeah, it's the right link. It's the right link. It's the voter lookup.elections.ny.gov, where you go in there, and you put your name, your address, your age, and everything pops up for you. You know, so, but still, this is just an outrageous thing to do. It's false voter information. They know it. They've made these mistakes, if they really were mistakes, in Wisconsin and North Carolina.
So, well, there's really nothing you can do about it other than get the information out that it's not correct.
Right, which is what we've done. I sent it out to the Capital Women Listserv. I sent it out to my personal email. There are going to be texts going out today about it. All the candidates that I'm working for, we're all going to be putting out emails about it today.
I would just say general rule of thumb, if you're being told you have to drive 3.5 hours to vote, assume that's not correct.
Right. Or they're naming a place that you've never heard about. So, yeah.
All right. Let me introduce the other
Sorry, guys.
Introduce the other two members of our panel this morning. UAlbany lecturer in Africana Studies, Jennifer Burns, is back. Mai, we've missed you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I missed everyone as well. I have a very booked and busy life.
I know.
And the last 2 months were all of it.
Well, and
all the things.
You're finishing up semesters and doing stuff and da 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 da. And so it's very nice to have you here. We love when you're here, and it's great to have you here this morning. Mike Spain, former associate editor of the Times Union newspaper. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
I'm great, and congratulations for a very, very successful and a very, very long 2-week fund drive. You guys all sounded weary last week, but you all sound chipper today and glad that it's over, and congratulations.
Thank you. very, very much. It really was. It was quite an effort by all, and we are very, very happy to be back on the air with regular programming, as we said, was the order of the day. Well, guess what's happening in just a few days? There is going to be a debate. It is a matchup between the former president of the United States, Donald Trump, and the current president of the United States, Joe Biden. And the press coverage seems to be, well, who does this mean more to? And who has more at stake? And who is better equipped to win, as it were, of whatever that means, right, in a debate like this? Now, there's a lot to talk about in this, I believe, because not only will are we looking at a situation where this is a debate that is not being run by the debate commission, right, that has typically been the way that we have run presidential debates. It also is the earliest debate that we have had in the presidential debate. It is one of two. It is going to be on the CNN cable network, otherwise known as Cable Network News.
And other networks.
Five
are
carrying others. Others.
Yeah, networks. Yeah. And NPR is still trying to figure out how to get involved in it, so we'll see if they're successful or not. But anyway, so this is interesting, of how this is going to work and ultimately what's going to happen. It is a debate rematch, and it meant a lot the last time. So there's so many competing storylines here that I think I'll just throw it out to the group, and then we can kind of work our way through the various strains of this as we go. Mike, let's start with you. We're probably going to have to take a break and then come back, but go at it.
Okay. Well, it's clear that both sides are trying to set expectations low for their side, and certainly former President Trump has done that over the weekend. He suggests that that Biden will be using some kind of stimulant drugs when he shows up on Thursday night in Atlanta, like he has claimed Biden did during the State of the Union address, because he had a lot of energy and enthusiasm. That contradicts the basic message that Trump has tried to stick with during this campaign, that Sleepy Joe was out there and he's not capable of that energetic type behavior. But the problem is that Trump doesn't do policy very well. So his people are trying to tone him down. They're trying, in a weird way, Trump's people are trying to tone him down and keep him calm and not have him go off the deep end. And Biden's people are more than likely trying to, pump the president up so he exhibits energy, not necessarily with any stimulants other than maybe a Diet Coke or something like that. But it is Atlanta, And
right. Gotta be cold.
Yes.
Right. But I want to be honest with you. When I heard this debate was going to happen, I was very skeptical. I didn't think it would happen. I thought somebody would come up with a reason to bail out, probably Trump, the way he dropped out of one of the debates back in 2020. It looks like it's going to happen. It'll be very interesting to see. And probably everybody who watches it, most people who watch it, will have made up their mind. And it might sway some people who are still open-minded and haven't decided where to go. And then it will be up to how they perform and what they say, because it'll be sound bites ad infinitum for the next several days.
There's a couple things about this debate that I actually like. One is that it's not being done in front of an audience.
Agreed.
It's just being done in a studio, and I think that is we've seen this over. We've seen certain debates devolve, mm-hmm, as there has been a lot of chatter going on and clapping and interruptions to the debates. So I think that's a plus. Also, I was actually surprised that Trump agreed to that, but that's okay. The other one is there's no opening statements, and then they do have time. They have time to answer, and then there's time for rebuttal. So I don't know how much they're going to adhere to that schedule. and how the moderators will be able to.
Aren't they cutting mics off at the end of the 2 minutes?
So. Yeah. I believe so. Yeah. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. I think a lot of that looks good on paper. We'll see how it's actually operationalized.
I agree. I think it's it could be a little different.
Yes.
The Orange Menace will be like, mic's cut off.
Right. All right. We're going to hold there. When we come back, we'll hear from both Jennifer and Libby, and we welcome your letters on the debate. Welcome back. The roundtable panel is here. We are back from our hiatus, and it is a thrill to be here, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll return right after this short break. Well, good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Jennifer Burns, Libby Post, and Mike Spain. We heard from Mike on the topic of today of, well, not just today. It's not our only topic, of course, but it's the first one we started with, and that has to do with a debate coming up on Thursday night at 9 p.m. on the CNN television network and others. It will be broadcast in other places, and it will also be it'll be moderated by Jake Tapper and Dana Bash.
And Jake Tapper is Trump's favorite.
Well, I don't think that either one of them are really friendly faces, but I will probably get a certain amount of pushback on this, but I think. In our current media climate, are they fair journalists? I don't know. I think they're pretty close.
Yeah.
I think they're pretty close. It's not. Is Jake Tapper snarky? Absolutely.
Well, was he targeted by Trump? Absolutely.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, but who isn't?
That's right. Even when there is a friendly face, I'm thinking of Megyn Kelly and others.
Yeah.
They haven't fared much better right. with a candidate. So I don't know. I don't know that it really matters. I think it's anyone's going to be probably the devil in that particular scenario. Jennifer Burns.
My thoughts are very similar, in a sense that I still will be surprised if this takes place. There's not some reason.
Well, what are we going to talk about on Thursday and Friday?
Well, how it didn't, and what comes through social and everywhere else about why it didn't. So that's still large in my mind. The other thing I think for me is the dynamic during the debate without the audience, as you said, because that is one of the things that Trump really plays up to and gets mm-hmm. energy from. In all of his rallies and all of his talks, you can see that give and take, right? Like that he's performing and the feedback he gets sometimes takes him off the teleprompter in those settings. And he has these little quips and sayings and name calling. And those are the things that draw many people to him. They're waiting for that kind of name calling and stuff. So this will be like sitting in a regular meeting to some extent, or just a regular sort of, you know, closed door kind of session, which by all accounts, even many people, Bill Barr and others, have said Trump is uninterested.
Mm-hmm.
He lacks attention in those kind of settings, right? So I think that is going to be interesting to watch. I also think a lot of it is going to be, even the coverage of it later will be about the performance rather than the substantive content, because that is something that oftentimes Trump bumbles around about, right? Mm-hmm. Like he doesn't ever really fully deliver coherent, straight to the point content or information about what his agenda and his policies will be. They'll just be like catchphrases and, you know,
unhinged.
Rhetoric. Yeah, like that sort of thing. So I think that's going to be the most interesting parts of it. Now, for Biden, it'll be interesting to watch what he kind of pounces on when Trump sort of stumbles or opens the door and when he delivers certain things that he really wants Americans to hear. Like, you know, 34 conviction, like, you know, those sort of the criminality behavior, the contrast and hypocrisy there, the issue with women's rights and abortion and reproductive health, which Trump is all over the place on. So, you know, it kind of says whatever the crowd seems to bite on. And if there's not a crowd, will he be able to just deliver and stay controlled with whatever they're prepping him with? Right.
Yeah. Does he have the discipline, I guess?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the answer to that is no.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I do think yes, I agree with you that. I do think it's going to be a different vibe without that audience, without people feeding it, and that what exactly how he'll feel, how Trump will do. Libby.
Well, I think it's going to be a circus. I think Biden will be the adult in the room, as he always is. Trump will try to make Biden look like a bumbling, old guy, and he should talk. He can't put a simple sentence together, right? And he'll just keep throwing things out like inflation and the border and this, that, and the other thing. And Biden will keep saying, what Biden might want to say, I don't know if he'll keep saying, is, we don't let felons serve in the Army. Why should we let felons be president? And, there's, I think Biden will focus on that. He'll focus on choice, because I don't care what the polling says now. I think women will be coming to the polls because of choice, especially when you have, states voting to take away choice. You have Louisiana doing what it just did with the Ten Commandments, which, by the way, folks, the Ten Commandments came from my side of the block, right? It was in the Old Testament, right? And just to be clear, we believe life begins at first breath, not at conception. So if you're going to be real literalists of where the Ten Commandments came from, just like our Supreme Court thinks they're literalists around where the Constitution, then, we have to be a pro-choice nation. It's just that simple.
Anyone else before we go to the letters? No. Stirring that pot, Libby, stirring
of
that
course.
Pot. All right, let's go to some letters we have on this issue. We go to Jesse. I wonder about the value of the debate. Will the moderators be forceful enough to call out Trump when he lies or simply doesn't answer the question put to him? I'm actually going to hold on that letter just for a second. The value of the debate. Do we need this?
It may be useful. We don't know how it's going to play out, if it plays out at all, as Jennifer says. I guess the question is, will it just be the two of them shouting at each other, and will that be useful, or will it even make voter turnout lower, result in less interest in this race, which can be devastating when people don't come to the polls?
I know I'm asking the converted here, but in the audience, this audience of three, but even in our audience, is anyone not? And that doesn't mean a political affiliation. That just means, are any of us looking at this and saying, "Oh, I hope I hear an intelligent discussion on what's going to happen with climate change"? I mean, that's not going to happen, right? I mean, that's just, I wonder what we're going to do as far as an immigration policy moving forward, or. Circus, the word you use, circus, seems to be a very valid term.
Yeah. Well, and I think, the other thing is, it is like just tuning in to watch an episode of The Apprentice, right? Mm-hmm. Like it has, or like Real Housewives
right,
or something.
Right.
Like it's
no,
turned
it's reality.
Into,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
it's
like
reality
it's,
TV.
Turned into that. And I think some of what people may be tuning into is a judgment on their age more than their mental capabilities, right? The visual, almost in an ableist way. Like there's still a debate going on over if Biden can deliver things right because he stutters. He walks the way he walks. So physically, that also then means intellectually, he's not all there, right? Those are the things that have been circulating for a while. And so I think there are some people who may be tuning in just to see what they look like physically rather than mentally. And I think that's a problem because when people get older, their bodies change. Mm-hmm. And that's natural. It doesn't necessarily mean that their minds have now become decrepit or, you know.
I mean, I do think it's Mike touched on this at the beginning, but it is every time over the last several years, over the course of his presidency, people have said, oh, you know, this is now finally we're going to see Biden in a moment where he's going to be giving the State of the Union speech, or he's going to be doing this and he's going to be doing that. And we're worried that he's going to be able to, you know, string sentences together for more than a half hour. And then he always exceeds expectations.
He
has
always
exceeds those expectations. Which is why, as you noted, Mike, I think there's so obviously if he does that, he's got to be on something, because he certainly couldn't do it naturally. Right.
Right.
And is the same lens going to be used in how Donald Trump acts on stage, and not just the carnival barker that is in him, but the not being able to make a coherent thought.
Or not rev up the crowd and get laughter and cheers and applause and three-word chants about something.
Right, lock her up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now we can do lock him up. So.
Well, and you remember with Hillary Clinton, the pacing and the walking behind her and all that. Mm. So, you know, you wonder if that'll be a part of it, too. Mm. For him.
He didn't do it to Biden the last time around. He did it to Hillary because she was a woman and he felt like he could just stomp on her. And the way and the format, it was more a town hall kind of thing. Mm-hmm. This time it'll be very difficult.
Yeah. I mean, aren't you really, really curious, everybody, about how each of them is going to do? I mean, there'll be eyeballs on this thing.
Sure.
I'm
locked in.
I've already had two meetings canceled that I was supposed to go. Like, people were supposed to have meetings in town, and people canceled them and said, oh, I know everyone's going to be watching the debate. Like, you know, this is a big deal.
Yeah. And the other part.
9 o'clock's too late, but go ahead.
Yeah. But let's remember the State of the Union. That was the opening of Biden's campaign, and he was energetic. He slapped Marjorie Taylor Greene proverbially upside the head, as well as Lauren Boebert. And he is a consummate campaigner. Is he 80-something? Sure. Has he slowed down? I have too. So, you know, it is what it is. But his mind is fine, and his ability to use his mouth is just as good. And so I think we'll see the campaign, Joe.
I mean, he's scrappy.
He's
scrappy.
I think
that'll play as well.
Yeah, I mean, if Trump is disciplined and he does not revert to sort of the crazy, wacky things like Hannibal Lecter and all that stuff. Great guy.
That was a great imitation.
But if he sticks to, you know, and tries to, I mean, I've heard some excerpts of his when he's on podcasts with different, you know, sort of right-wing people. And sometimes he speaks semi-normally, and he doesn't revert to all the crazy rhetoric. He has an opportunity to demonstrate he can look sane, and Biden has an opportunity to demonstrate that he can be sharp and really know the stuff. And both of them are being challenged to do just that, and their ability to do that will define, you know, who really benefits from this.
We're late for break. We'll go to that. And when we come back, we'll go to your letters and ask some other dangling questions in regards to the debate. We'll do all of that after this. We are listening to Peter Frampton this morning, just in case you were wondering. You can find out more by going to our playlist, which is posted online, wamc.org/roundtable. wamc.org/roundtable. Okay. Don't you think, this from Steve, don't you think the presidential debate would have seemed more fair and balanced to the American people if the networks got together to have moderators from both stations, like CNN and Fox? It may have increased viewership besides. That may be advantageous to all interests involved, including the network's bottom line. I don't disagree completely with this letter, but by the same token, this is what the candidates both agreed to. I think there were a lot of different possibilities, and this is what both sides agreed to. I don't understand exactly the calculus in that, but that's what was agreed to.
But I think the writer of that letter reflects that they assume that Jake Tapper will be hitting with some hard-edged questions that are trying to trip Trump up. And the fear is that if you had a Fox News personality on the debate, doing the questions, they'd be throwing softballs at him and doing the same to Biden, throwing hard, trying to trip him up. Pejorative questions that have an opinion embedded in them. Well, with the border crisis beyond any state that we've ever imagined in this world, those kinds of pejorative questions. And it's going to really make put pressure on the CNN hosts to not do that and to be extremely straightforward. And then what happens when one of the candidates says something that's factually untrue? Like when, for example, if Trump is to say immigrant crime is out of pace. Well, it's not. It's far lower than Americans who have lived here's crime, or crime is up so much. It's not. It's way down, or whatever. There's so many factual things that Trump frequently says that are wrong. And if they call him on that, they'll look opinionated and it will undermine, objectivity, the appearance of objectivity. And I don't know how they're going to handle it.
Maybe
this could go any way. Yeah.
Maybe they'll have on, Krylon fact-checking.
But it's
well,
so
I think
hard,
there will be a good deal of fact-checking that'll be done. I mean, I don't think any of these answers are going to come as major surprises on either side for either candidate. Again, I go back to this idea, though, that Trump has fought with both sides. I mean, he's had as many fights with anchors on Fox News and other conservative outlets that he felt have treated him poorly. So I certainly understand the tone of the letter. I agree with it, but it is I just don't know. Again, this was something that was agreed to, so there has to be it seems to me that the campaign feels that they have some advantage in doing that.
Just because Trump agreed doesn't mean he's going to play by the rules, because that's his modus operandi.
Well, right.
He'll agree all day long and then do whatever the hell he wants.
Well, and let's remember that one of the reasons that's conducted this way is because Chris Wallace. Remember when Chris Wallace interviewed or when they had the debate?
Chris,
and it was wild, right? Like he couldn't, it was like Trump was taking over Chris Wallace. He couldn't get a word in. He couldn't stop him. He couldn't do anything. He just manhandled him, right? As one of the people who were trying to regulate what was going on a little bit. You said earlier, Megyn Kelly. So I think the thing here is it won't matter necessarily. I understand the question and I see the point, but how much will it matter who the two are? Do we know who's, because they agreed to a second debate, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So
there will be
do we know who's?
Is it ABC?
I think so.
Yeah. I think ABC has picked their who is going to moderate it. But isn't a moderator in a debate like this kind of like a prosecutor with hostile witnesses? Don't they need to be?
Well,
that's
what they need to be.
I was going to say it's also like an Oscars or Golden Globe host. Like, who the hell wants that job? It's just
Jimmy Kimmel.
I mean, it doesn't do anything for anybody's career. Certainly, I remember when during COVID and during the last in the 2020 election cycle, and there was to be a debate between Biden and Trump, and Trump pulled out of that debate and instead opted for a forum with just Savannah Guthrie asking the questions on NBC. I was mortified. I was so upset. I canceled my subscription to Peacock. I got all mad and I was just, this isn't fair. They're just going to give this guy a 2-hour forum. Mm-hmm. And it was awful. And Savannah Guthrie
did such an amazing job.
She did a great job. And so then I wrote my apology letter.
Begged to come back.
I righted everything and got a lovely
note
back.
Still like the discount rate,
but
please.
Yes. I just, you don't know. You don't know. And I think, and I feel like these two both Dana Bash and Jake Tapper have, you know, have been around. I think they're used to this and I think they're pretty tested. I don't know.
They just can't come across as being on Biden's side and attacking Trump. I think that's a risk, and maybe that's what the writer was talking about. Mm-hmm. But if there was a Fox anchor and a CNN anchor there together, it might become a debate of the anchors, and that would distract and make it even less valuable to the public, which is really the intent of a debate, I think.
Chris makes an interesting point and said, did you see Dana Bash's interview with Kristi Noem? She was ill-prepared, and Noem absolutely owned her. She let her spin a constant web of falsehoods without being even a little confrontational. I did see that, and I don't disagree necessarily with the with the description, although I do have great respect for Dana Bash. But Chris goes on to say, Caitlin Collins would have been a much better mm-hmm. choice. Her interviews are hard-hitting, and she doesn't let any falsehoods slide. Caitlin Collins did the town hall with Trump yep. earlier in the election cycle, and it was painful to watch. I mean, he called her nasty, and he said that she was, you know, rude and went after her, and I don't know. Again, that was one of those things that I don't know if anybody came out as a winner.
It was the crowd Absolutely. That made all the difference. Yep. I would have liked to have seen that without the crowd and see how different it would have been. And we will get a chance, I guess, to see mm-hmm. kind of that this week.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. Mm-hmm. Excellent. All right, let's go to other letters that we have in the queue. I love it. Trump has to show that he is sane while Biden has to show that he knows his stuff. Doesn't Trump have to show that he knows his stuff, too? I don't think he can do that. Then we go to if Biden, this is from Ed, if Biden stumbles badly, maybe the Democratic bosses will come to their senses and allow nomination of a far better and credible team of candidates such as Mark Kelly and Gretchen Whitmer. Because at present, the current Democratic leadership will be complicit in ending of our democracy and electing an authoritarian by nominating a wobbly octogenarian and his very unpopular sidekick, Kamala.
Okay, there are some people out there who don't like Biden.
And they listen to us. That's what's astounding.
I just, you know, I think, I hear what you're saying, but I really believe that ship has sailed. I mean, I don't think we're in a position right now to be putting anyone else back into the race. But, all right, let's go to Steve, who writes to us and says, hey, welcome back, panel. Don't you think I think I read this one. I apologize. But thank you for the welcome back. Let's see this one. There's a meme going around quoting Kurt Vonnegut about this distinction and Jesus's New Testament versus Moses's Old Testament. What keeps religious fundamentalists from highlighting the Beatitudes instead of the Ten Commandments, we wonder? Question mark.
Well, that certainly can be an interesting, long discussion.
And one we're not ready to take out of this moment.
I don't know what it has to do with the debate, but I bet the Ten Commandments might come up during the debate.
Oh, I'm sure it will.
You know, because, I mean, it is a populist issue.
Right. And the Supreme Court, prior to this one, said no to that.
60 years ago, they
said no. There was also something recently in Alabama. They wanted to put up Ten Commandments on public space, and the court said no. Hmm. But this Supreme Court, who knows what they do?
For the majority of Americans who don't have cable TV, in order to watch the CNN debate, it will be shown on the free CNN headline channel found on the free apps Freevee and Pluto TV. It will also be shown on the live CNN feed on HBO Max. For people who neither have cable or who don't stream, are they then left out? I will do my homework during the break. And
yeah,
see.
Do you know if it's going
to
be broadcast?
Well, I thought it was
going to
be on other
radio?
Networks like NBC. ABC.
I have to check that out. Okay. I'm gonna go in and check that out in just a second. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll take up that thread, and then we'll move on to other topics, I promise. Other things to discuss on this Monday morning as we welcome the panel back after a bit of a hiatus. We are thanking you all for making that happen. We will return, I get to say, we'll be back after news with Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and the return of the Roundtable panel. We are very happy to be back. We have with us this morning Libby Post, Jennifer Burns, and Mike Spain, and of course you. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. So what I have found as of yesterday afternoon, CNN is making the debate available to simulcast an additional broadcast and cable news networks in the U.S. It has been agreed to that it will simulcast on ABC. So that is one that you will be able to get without
over
cable,
the air,
over the air station. Yeah. ABC News Live with pre-debate coverage beginning at 8 p.m. on the network and 7 p.m. on ABC Online. ABC News Digital and 538 will live blog the latest from the debate stage as it happens and provide analysis and the biggest takeaways from the night. And again, will be anchored by Jake Tapper and Dana Bash. The debate will air Thursday at 9 p.m., 8 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Pacific. Please set your DVRs accordingly. All right. And on every single solitary CNN platform, it will be there. So, including HBO Max.
And anything that's really hot that happens during the debate will be on everywhere.
Right.
For the
right.
rest of the
campaign.
Well,
I wonder, you know, right. A lot of those have also been on the news sites on Washington Post and the New York Times. That's
that
right.
Thing.
That was the name
yeah.
of that paper. but we'll see what happens with that too. All right, let's move on and go to topics. We'll slightly change the subject, and this is something that Libby alluded to earlier, and I would like to talk about it. That is the latest numbers when it comes to women voters, and Biden's lead with women is smaller than Trump's with men. And that is a warning for Democrats, says this headline in the New York Times. A new poll of female voters finds that concerns about inflation are still paramount, even as abortion is still an issue very much on the table for female voters. I will admit, Libby, I don't fully understand how that could be.
I think you talk to women who are either the head of households or the ones who go out shopping every week. And it is more expensive to feed your family. There's no two ways about that. But this is not, I mean, Trump will blame Joe Biden for inflation, but all of this was set in motion during the 4 years of Trump. Let's be honest about that. And they're doing their best to try to get it under control. But I think ultimately when all the media, the paid media gets really going, and the 527 money gets really going, it will all come down to choice again.
So, to be fair, just mm-hmm. so we're not making more out of this story than perhaps should be made out of this story, Biden is still leading mm-hmm. among women by eight percentage points. The question comes is that is down from 13% 4 years ago. So how much do you look at that given the Dobbs decision and the turnaround?
I had a lot of issues when I read this this article, because when I actually went and looked at the polls and the what was it, the KFF or the FKK yeah. or yeah, whatever, the surveys that they did.
Yeah. KFF.
Right. And it was like 5,000 total women around there, right? It was like
yes.
nationwide, but it was like 3,000 plus, and then looking at the two states of, I think it was Arizona and Michigan, and it said it was like about a 1,000 per state that they were looking at in there. So we took, right, 5,000-ish women.
And just real quick, KFF is a nonprofit organization that focuses on healthcare research.
Is it Kaiser
right.
Family
it
Foundation?
Is. Yeah.
Yes.
It is.
Yes.
So as when I saw that, I thought, okay, 5,000. It's hard. I know this is the size usually of many polls and how they study things, but 5,000 compared to nationwide how many women there are, I can't take this as super valid and very impactful, right? Their findings in this way. The other thing is, I agree with Libby. I think some women voters are already decided about abortion, right? They've already made and reproductive health care. They've already made that decision. So inflation then appears to be their top issue. Not because abortion isn't also a concern. It's just that they've fully decided about that already, right? So, so instead of putting that as my number one concern, that one they've moved off the main plate. I already know what I'm doing there, right? I already know what I think and what I believe. But when it comes to inflation, that's an ongoing thing. And where will we go from here? So I think that's why it rises a little higher in the numbers or in the reported numbers. But, you know, I think women are also frustrated, many, with feeling very duped by the gender kind of normative tropes and stereotypes that are put out. It was like, Kamala is a woman. Kamala is black. Right. Kamala is Asian, right? Like all this stuff. And that was supposed to make some kind of huge connection that all women jump to that would just support Biden, right? And that's not how it works. And really, everybody knows what they're getting from Trump, I think. Trump brings on a lot of women. He hired a lot of women. He appointed a lot of women. When you look at that, and I looked into a lot of this, they're very young women. And I've said that before on this show. A lot of it, to me, feels very groomerish, very misogynistic. And so, but yet it plays a little bit into some of the home and morals of the conservative evangelics. And so that remains a popular following. So when you look at some of these the polls and the surveys and all of that, you're speaking to I don't know, they start to reflect, depending on how many people will answer the phone and take the polls, that growing evangelical pushback of women who are like the Rona McDaniels and these Republican risers, right? Or the ones who have bought into the Lara Trump.
Mm-hmm. The Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Yeah.
And the like.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I...
Elise Stefanik.
So let me ask about this before I have Mike jump in. And that is, Mr. Biden's current struggles with black and Hispanic women are especially striking. He is winning among black women in the KFF survey by 58 percentage points, but that represents a significant drop from 86 percentage points among black women in the approach to the 2020 election, according to an average of New York Times Siena College polls from that election. His lead with Hispanic women has also shrunk substantially to about 12 points. The survey found Mr. Biden's lead among women overall to be 4 points. So what I can't find, which I don't know is completely clear, is that 28% difference, are they going to Trump?
Right. That's a really good question. I was thinking it as you were reading those those stats. You're right, Libby. When they get, if they get in front of the voting booth or get before, you know, and have the pencil in hand on the machine or whatever it is, they will probably vote for Biden. Mm-hmm. Most women, or majority of women, like they did last time. But will they have the enthusiasm to even come out and vote? And that's really the big issue, I think. And it's really hard to know how it's going to play out.
It's all according to how misogynist Trump is during the campaign. Yeah. You know, I mean, if he slips and he's like, yeah, we're going to outlaw abortion, you know, or we're going to get rid of contraception or
We're not. Because he did say that. And
yeah,
then he didn't.
Right. So if he's going to do, you know, that's what's going to happen. That's what will happen.
Right. Well, Joe, to your point, though, I mean, these women who are not checking the box on these surveys for favoring Biden, you cannot assume if they favored him last time that they're now going over to Trump because Biden disappointed them. I mean, they just may not.
At least not by 28%. I mean, that just seems to be a really large number to lose. Mm-hmm. But
I think there's other things that these women, many women, are looking at too, like what's going on with Israel and the Gaza Strip, right? That's a huge and the foreign policy that Biden or Trump will take in that, you know.
Yeah, I
think that's huge, and people aren't talking about it enough and what women voters are thinking about.
And if they think, if the left thinks that Biden is too supportive of Israel, Wait until Trump gets in.
Mm-hmm.
He will arm them to the teeth. He'll do the bombings himself. He'll send our military over there because the two of them are two peas in a pod.
Mm-hmm.
And so
you mean Netanyahu?
And Trump. And don't think that staying home or not voting or protest vote is going to work to anybody's advantage except Trump's.
That's right.
All right, we go to another topic on, well, actually, a couple of letters, mostly having to do with the debate. Tim says, would it be hard to imagine that Trump may just walk out of the debate? I did think about that. Just like, just say, I'm done. Do kind of the Diane Sawyer 60 Minutes thing where you say, okay, you're against me. I'm gone.
He may well say that to Dana Bash and to Jake Tapper. He could, and that could be part of the plan.
Yep. His minions would love that. It would reflect the rebellion that is fermenting in the MAGA world. That from Tim, and I think that is one of the many things to be watching. Let's see. We go to this letter. I think Jon Stewart of The Daily Show would be a great moderator.
Well, he is sharp on the facts.
He is sharp.
Certainly would be entertaining. Jory says, I love it. Okay, I think I read that one. I apologize. Okay, on to new topics. And we go to this, which is the one topic that I mentioned that there were a couple that got lost while we were away on hiatus for fundraising. And that is Louisiana's Ten Commandments law. Signaling a broader Christian agenda, Governor Jeff Landry wants his state to be at the forefront of a national movement to advance legislation with a Christian worldview. You know, like it says in the Constitution.
Yeah.
The crowd at Our Lady of Fatima Marjorie. Catholic School in Lafayette, Louisiana, applauded Governor Jeff Landry as he signed bill after bill this week on public education in the state, making it clear he believed God was guiding his hand. One new law requires that transgender students be addressed by the pronouns for the gender on their birth certificates. God gives us our marks, said the governor. Another allows public schools to employ chaplains, quote, a great step for expanding faith in public schools. And then, as if the grand finale, he signed into law a mandate that the Ten Commandments be hung in every public classroom, demonstrating a new willingness for Louisiana to go where other states have not. Last month, Louisiana also became the first state to classify abortion pills as dangerous controlled substances. Mr. Landry, a Republican, said at the signing ceremony, "We don't quit." Taken together, the measures have signaled the ambition of the governor and the Republican-led legislature to be at the forefront of a growing national movement to create and interpret laws according to a particular conservative Christian worldview. And Mr. Landry, a Catholic who has been vocal about his faith's influence in shaping his politics, wants to lead the change. My question is, much of this has been challenged in the Supreme Court in the past. So this is another stab at trying to change that?
I don't think so. I think that they know well that the Supreme Court, well,
yeah,
they expect the Supreme Court to knock them down based on just decades and decades of court rulings regarding such things like school prayer, et cetera, going back to the 60s. But
the monument of the Ten Commandments.
Yeah,
the
right.
State House.
That was just a few years ago.
Yeah.
Alabama.
But Landry wins anyway because he signed these into law, and then those people in Washington, those judges in Washington, said we couldn't do it, but we did what we could, and he's going to be, you know, praised by the Christian right for it. He's going to become their hero, and he'll.
He'll run for president in 4 years.
Yeah, we'll run for president in 4 years, perhaps. And you know, this part about, you know, boasting about how your religious upbringing has shaped you as a public figure and shaped your views on public policy, That goes on all the time, and it's true. I mean, Mario Cuomo, when he was governor, the late Mario Cuomo, always talked about his Catholic education and his ethics. I mean, I heard an interview with Anthony Fauci, and he credits the Jesuit upbringing for you know, his strong positions. You know, people are shaped by religion, but they can't carry it and implant it into a secular
government.
Make it the
law of the land.
You can't
right.
force it on other people. Freedom of religion is not the freedom to force your religion on other people. My religion frames my worldview. It's about healing the world and doing good work while you're here, and not about going to heaven. It's about what you do when you're here. So, you know, that does frame my outlook. But the notion of this is a Christian country, that this is Christian nationalism, you can come visit me and everybody like me in the camps, because that's where they want to put us. People think, oh, you're being hysterical. This is how Hitler started. This is how any kind of political movement that marginalizes people, this is how it all starts. And so we see the Supreme Court today taking on a case on transgender care, and I don't see that going well. And they just want to put us on an island somewhere and not have to think about us. Or, you know, we'll be in a camp somewhere, and it won't, the outcome won't be that great. And, you know, I really do think that it's possible for that to happen in this day and age because of the way these people think and the groupthink that goes on within their followers. You know, look at Donald Trump and look at the people who are supporting him. These were people that traditionally never voted because they didn't think government was there for them. Donald Trump gets up, calls people racist things, calls them drug dealers, demonizes
rapists,
people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Immigrants, rapists, and
drug dealers. And yeah. And he was elected on that kind of rhetoric. Don't think it can happen here, folks.
So you look at the state of Louisiana that just a few years ago had a Democratic governor, John Bel Edwards, who ultimately was thrown out of office because he felt that schools and churches and businesses should close during the pandemic. So now you, even though the legislature has been Republican for over a decade, then they gained the supermajority, and now they have Governor Landry in power as a Republican governor. So things obviously can go that way. But you wonder of how strong that sentiment really is within the state, given the radical turn of even a governor just 4 years ago.
You know, we're going to New Orleans in the fall for an animal welfare conference. You know, it's like you go to New Orleans, nobody thinks like this. I mean, I'm sure there are some, but it's like
it's
Mardi
different.
Gras all the time, right? Yeah. You know, and so it's going to be interesting. And it's too bad that it's going to be in New Orleans, because if I had my way, I wouldn't be going there. But it is what it is. And it's a scary time.
Okay, you're looking at me. So I have a couple of things here. First is looking at the allocation of funds here. Because when you think about it, right, they have private schools throughout Louisiana. And they're redirecting government funds or public funds to those private schools. And now you have almost an infusion, we'll say, of the religion in those private schools put into, forced upon, present, whatever word you want to use, in the public sector. So for not just the people who want control, but also these evangelicals who want to then be able to control what not just those other people, but the poor is who they see in public schools, right? Largely the minorities are in the public schools. That's some of this mindset, that they're able to have a double indoctrination that's backed by money. So you're really then, this is similar to, I think it was last year, there were a number of different stories about what was happening in Russia with Ukrainian children that they were taking, mm-hmm. and then putting in the schools and reprogramming.
Right.
So as Libby was saying earlier, there is this kind of connection or kind of similarity that my mind can draw to this when it comes to how we're using religion and which schools we're using it in and where the money's being funded to do it and what children are being targeted, right? Which is the public school children. There are a lot of white, poor, also black, brown,
right,
in those schools. So it's like we know better than you as well,
right,
on how to live and
right,
how to be moral, yeah, and we're going to indoctrinate you to follow our path and do as we say.
I just think there is a degree. I understand, and it's certainly mm-hmm, symbolic and hugely symbolic. But I'm just going to open the studio door, and so you can look right over there. There's a bulletin board, and it has all of the state posters about employment law and disability and so forth. I've been here for decades. I've never looked at one of them. I'm just wondering, like, is any kid going to walk up and just because it's posted, actually look at it? There was one legislature who said, and it should be in the lunchrooms, too. Okay. I just don't know.
Are you suggesting it's window dressing?
Well, I am, Michael. No. I am. And I just think it's look, I don't think it should be there, but I also don't. It's just silly. It's a lot like I don't know. I understand it's something that is a win for them, but by the same token, to your point, if mm-hmm, no one's looking at it, if no one is actually digesting
right,
it will be digested because part of this argument is that it's a historical document. They're having two different debates or two different arguments, right, to reinforce its presence. One is that it's good morality and everybody should get exposed and then you can kind of decide, but you can't decide. And then the other is that it's historical. And so it's part of history and should be on the wall right next to the Declaration of yeah, Independence and these mm-hmm, other founding documents of the nation. So it does get woven in to this conversation. The question then is if children have questions about it, how does their teacher answer those questions? Because it can easily be incorporated into the lesson plans.
Right. What's next? Will it be required that they teach the Ten Commandments in the curriculum, for first grade or whatever?
Right.
Let's talk about coveting the neighbor's wife.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right. Well,
let's right, get into that conversation.
There was a lot of, late night talk about when this first happened in Louisiana that and the Ten Commandments, I think Trump broke around seven of them, didn't he?
Yeah. Right. That's the thing. And then they embrace him because of his racism. I mean, that's really what it comes mm-hmm, down to.
Well, yeah. I mean, the Ten Commandments is a historical document, how some people in Western culture, defined how they looked at life. But so was the Quran. So mm-hmm, was what Confucius said. So are the, quotes of, Cahil Gibran, maybe, for some people. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's many, many documents all over the world that define or that help influence how people look at life and their philosophy of life and their rules for their own life. And to acknowledge that is certainly reasonable, but not by taking one and posting it and not putting it in context. And it does have a context in a history class, I'm saying. If you're talking about Western civilization, yeah, of course. But not this way. And it's an in-your-face kind of a thing for people who
sure,
who mm-hmm, don't want to have this. And it I think it's to make people who are not conforming, whether it's
right,
people who are LGBTQ, mm-hmm, whether it's people who are minorities, it's to make them, if they're poor, to make them second-class citizens, I mean, I don't know about the
right,
camps.
I need to take a break, but
yeah,
go ahead.
Okay, I don't know about the camps, Lib. I mean, maybe this is the first step, and I won't deny that, but it's to certainly lower them. They're not full citizens if they don't embrace this.
We'll be right back after this. We were having a discussion during the break about this, the issue that we were talking about of Louisiana's Ten Commandments law. And Jennifer brought up a very good point that we are overlooking the other law that was signed, which has to do with surgical castration. That seemed to get away from some of us. Put that into context.
Yeah, because before you could use medicinal, right? Mm-hmm. If you were convicted of rape, judges had the option to sentence that if you are convicted.
For just rapists or child molesters?
It is molesters, rapist, I wrote it down, whose victims are below the age of 13.
Okay, so this is child. Okay.
Yes, but now...
Oh, but here's my question. Okay. What happens when the girl who's raped, who can get pregnant, right, because she has her period now, gets pregnant? They won't let her have an abortion.
Correct. Okay. And in the meantime, though, the judge now before, it could be the medicinal part. That could be part of the sentencing structure. A medical castration, I guess, is how they kind of call that. But now they can actually sentence a surgical castration. So, when you,
I mean, would that pass the test? I mean, wouldn't that go to the ACLU has said it's going to challenge the
all
Ten
of these
Commandments,
things will
and
be
all of these will probably be bundled in that.
I'll
go back to what I said originally. You know, he still won, even if all of them get shot down by the court. He's the guy that stood up for the Christian right, and when he runs for the higher office, people will remember that.
Right.
But I mean, think about this too, that when you couple it with, as Libby brought up, the removal largely, right, of abortion rights and women's reproductive health care and things like that, you have a state government who's deciding whether you've convicted a controlling your body or trying to determine what goes on with your body as a woman a crime. The drugs now to help with any kind of abortion or something like that.
A crime.
If you are convicted of rape or molestation and all of that, which we know sometimes we have people who are falsely convicted and all those sort of things, your body is now part of what the state can control too, right? So you have this layering, not just of controlling the lives of people about what they're receiving in school, but then the state itself stripping away the determination to protect one's own body regardless of what's going on in the country, right? It's and yet, at the same time, signing bills that allow concealed carry without permit.
Yeah.
This is scary stuff. It when you put it all together, it's not one isolated thing that we're all up in arms and shocked about. You put the whole thing together, and it's horrifying, in my opinion.
Well, yes. I mean, the term supermajority in any sense is horrifying when you think of what can be accomplished with that. We do have a letter from John who says, well, if they're going to post the Ten Commandments in classrooms, they should be historically accurate and be printed in Hebrew.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Good idea.
It's a good...
Mm-hmm. Right to left, right?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. All right. We have about 10 minutes, I believe. Let's...
I just want to say one thing.
Go ahead.
This guy's a Catholic, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, correct.
I remember, I don't remember, but I remember reading about the 1960 election, right, where we had a Catholic, Kennedy was Catholic, running for president, and every other element of Christian society was afraid because they thought he was going to take his marching orders from the Pope.
Right.
Now that dichotomy has totally disappeared.
Full circle.
Right. Yeah. And we've come full circle.
With only the second Catholic president in office,
Joe Biden.
Right.
And if we've come full circle where the Christian right, the Christian nationalists have embraced the Catholics who are as right-wing as they are. Mm-hmm. I just find that from a political point of view sort of fascinating.
It is fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely.
Just like Christianity, Catholicism, there are people within all of Christianity who are very different politically and look at it very differently. And that's true in the Catholic Church. There's very right-wing Catholics and conservative Catholics. There's very progressive and liberal Catholics. I mean, there's no labels that really apply, to Christians.
Right.
I think it diminishes the value of Christianity when these evangelical Christians that we're talking about in this particular story are being portrayed as the Christians. I mean, there's a lot of Christians. And, I mean, that's true, I think, in a lot of faiths. You know, there's people who are very progressive and people very militant and people are very, you know, gentle about their approach to things. So it gets very complicated very quickly.
A.B. writes, Louisiana is ranked 48th in education, perhaps spending their money on hiring and retaining more teachers, books, etc., rather than hiring a chaplain and printing tablets might be money better spent. Another very good point made on this issue. All right, we have, as I said, just about 8 or 9 minutes left. I'd like to go to the one other story that we didn't get to discuss during the during our fundraiser, and that was the bump stock debate. The Supreme Court ruling on bump stocks could open the door to more lethal weapons. This is the sort of the follow-up to the decision of the Supreme Court. The court's decision has the potential to undercut President Biden's efforts to restrict other gun accessories that enable semi-automatic rifles to fire at speeds rivaling those of machine guns. After a gunman in Las Vegas killed 60 people at a concert in 2017, officials focused on a gun accessory known as a bump stock, a device that allows a rifle to fire at nearly the rate of a machine gun. Bump stocks were banned by the Trump administration after that mass shooting. But when the Supreme Court last week struck down that ban, which had been a rare victory for gun safety advocates in recent years, it had the potential to open the door not just to bump stocks. The ruling could also undercut President Biden's efforts to restrict other gun accessories that give semi-automatic rifles rapid-fire capabilities. Lawyers and gun policy experts on both sides of the gun debate are making this point. The devices are replacement triggers known as forced reset triggers or wide open triggers that allow shooters to fire more than 900 rounds in a minute with one continuous squeeze. In March 2022, 4 years after the ban on bump stocks was issued, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives also imposed restrictions on some of these trigger devices. The agency said in a letter at the time that the devices effectively turned semiotic weapons into prohibited machine guns. Now, lawyers and experts said that the restrictions could be upended by the Supreme Court's 6-3 ruling overturning the ban on bump stocks. Immediately after the court issued its ruling on Friday, lawyers for gun rights groups suing to overturn the trigger restrictions filed a letter citing the bump stock decision as a new authority that, quote, weighs directly on a central question in the case. That question is, what defines a machine gun? Seems like 600...
900
a minute.
It's insane.
Would 900 rounds in a minute would certainly qualify. But
yeah, it almost looks like the Supreme Court used a loophole saying that that's not technically a machine gun. Well, I think technically it does the same thing that makes it covered by the 1930s legislation, which banned machine guns. But, you know, the TU had a great editorial, Times Union had a great editorial yesterday about this. You know, everybody's calling on Congress now to pass a bill that would outlaw bump stocks and these kinds of triggers. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they probably would have done that in 2017 after this crazy guy in Las Vegas killed all those people, 60 people using these kinds of bump stocks, et cetera. But right now, that wouldn't get through Congress. And they think it was the NRA, and, you know, a lot of people believe it was the NRA and Trump decided, no, let's not go the route of Congress. Let's make it a let's make it a presidential order. Mm-hmm. And that way it'll get thrown out by the courts and we won't have to worry about this restriction. And that's the way to get around it. And that was very, very clever and sinister. And I think that if it went before Congress right now, I don't think it would even get out of committee. I mean, it wouldn't get on the floor. You wouldn't get the 60 votes needed to get past the filibuster.
Jennifer.
I was just trying to figure out what else I could do 900 times in under a minute. Yeah. Right? Like,
not much.
Think about that.
Yeah.
I mean, that could be if you divide it in half, depending on where you are. And like we've seen in Las Vegas and elsewhere, that could be 500 bodies in a minute.
Yeah. Right? And that's
the thing. 450. I mean, my math's not great, but like, this is Right. It's almost so overwhelming. It's hard to even wrap your brain around it.
Well, it's also it's not something that we have to dream about or think of, not dream like aspirationally,
right.
but to imagine. Thank you.
Right.
To imagine it,
right.
Because we've lived
it's
it.
It's happening.
We've
right.
seen it
over and over again.
Right. We know the results of this.
I mean,
right.
here's a court that, you know, says it's pro-life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And now it's being pro-death, because that's what this is. This is pro-death.
Yeah.
This is pro-killing people.
Yeah, and using the chutzpah of this. Did I say that right?
Chutzpah. You need a little guttural.
Okay. Chutzpah of this is that they are, you know, literally translating the Constitution, saying that the law said machine guns.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This is not a machine gun. It's an AR-15 with a bump stock on it. That's not a machine gun. What does an AR-15 with a bump stock do? It fires 900 rounds in a single second when you hold your finger, mm-hmm. in a single minute when you hold your...
Right.
I don't mean to oversimplify this, but if I take my house and I put two garage doors on the side of it...
Right.
It's not a house anymore. It's my garage.
Right?
I would.
You know, it is all about the definition of machine gun, what exactly a machine gun is. And I think they were just hypocrites when
it's
they...
It's like, what is
the majority of the court.
Yeah, what's what is, right?
Yeah, right.
You remember what
well,
is?
Well, that
is.
That was chutzpah.
Yeah, that was chutzpah. Yeah.
But, I mean, aren't there... And I don't know this because I don't know a lot about... the policies. Well, firearms, you know, and like different policies, because they're all so different in different states and sometimes even different counties. You know, there's all that stuff. But like, I think this comes down a little bit to, I don't want to say who buys what, but maybe the stereotype about who buys what. Because isn't it illegal in many places to like alter your gun to be like a sawed off shotgun?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, it is.
Right. And nobody's like... this disparity between doing that, but then being able to alter your gun to shoot 900. Because out of a sawed-off shotgun, how many shots without... it's just a weird... It's hard for me to wrap my brain around.
We won't let this much smaller scale thing happen, but we'll let somebody have 900 a minute. You know?
And while you're wrapping your brain around it, just think the court voted 6-3.
Right. And let's not forget, semi-automatic weapons were illegal in this country for a long time.
Right.
Until the NRA started scaring people, that saying that black people can have those guns too. And you know what that will mean.
You better get one yourself.
Yeah, you better get one yourself, because they're going to come after you, those scary black men with guns.
Well, they let the bill passed, but it only had a 10-year lifespan.
Right, and they let it expire, and they didn't renew it. And it's because of the racism of the NRA.
All right, we'll end it there. My thanks to everybody. That was a good way, a good comeback, all. Thank you very much. That was very nice.
The round table is back.
Give you an idea what you've been missing. My thanks to Mike Spain, Jennifer Burns, and to Libby Post. We'll be back right after this.